Commission Finance and Policy Committee meeting for February 23rd, 2012 to order. And first up is Senator Peterson. And what we'll plan on doing, members, as you look at your agenda, you'll see Senate File 1685 and 1686 are both authored by Senator Peterson. We'll combine those two bills and have the testifiers who would testify on both them bills handle them both at the same time and have the discussion on that. Senator Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Before you today, we have Senate File 1685 relating to the bill that relates specifically to funding for local road improvements, and Senate File 1686 is funding for local bridge replacement and rehabilitation. We're asking for a $30 million appropriation for local roads that have regional significance, and a $75 million appropriation for bridge and replacement and rehabilitation that have the same regional significance. And we have some guests today that are here to help me present that case to your committee this afternoon.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Well, good afternoon. My name is John McDonald. I am the Faribault County Engineer and the current president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. I'd like to thank the chair and the rest of the committee for the time to talk about this vital issue to rural Minnesota or to Minnesota transportation. Funding for the local bridge program has allowed Minnesota residents and businesses to benefit from safer, more efficient bridges through a combination of state, federal, and local funding that provides efficiency and stability to the bridge repair and replacement effort. Previous legislatures and administrations have supported funding for local bridges over two decades with dollar amounts ranging from $20 million to $50 million. These funds have always been used quickly and efficiently to repair structurally deficient and functionally obsolete bridges. Counties, cities, and townships apply for and receive state bridge funds to assist in ensuring bridges are repaired in a timely manner. Projects have been funded all across the state, from rural counties to suburban areas to core cities. State bridge bond funds contribute 20% of the local match normally required on federal bridge projects. Bridges on the state aid system are normally funded at 50% of the funds from bridge bonds and 50% of the funds from state aid highway dollars or local funds. And bridges on county roads are funded 100% through bridge bonding. We have a bridge down in Faribault County. It's on a county road. We could not replace that structure without the bridge bonding program. Bridge bond funds do not pay for approach work, engineering, right-of-way costs, and the removal of the existing structures. These costs are covered by local governments. Local governments have pledged matching local funds for almost 1,300 deficient bridges that could be repaired or replaced in 2012 or 2013. We believe $75 million should be allocated for this program in this year's bonding bill to allow local governments to hire workers and sign contracts with private sector firms to quickly repair and replace many of these bridges. The average bridge replacement cost is just over $300,000. Local bridges connect to local roads that are aging and becoming increasingly costly to repair. Our Minnesota businesses are relying on a network of roads and bridges to ship products and conduct business. Roads that require weight restrictions or cause vehicle damage because of poor conditions cost businesses and industry in our state real money. Funding for the local road improvement program will leverage local and federal funds to accelerate the completion of roadway projects that will improve safety, strengthen roadways to handle heavier weights, and repair crumbling highways by putting people back to work in the hard-hit construction industry. Local governments have identified projects that can be completed in 2012 or 2013. Without the local road improvement program, some of these projects will not be completed in the near future, and some will be pushed out many years into the future with a higher cost for taxpayers. We were just informed today by State Aid. They did a solicitation last year for $10 million of local bonding. They received over $60 million worth of projects, so there's $50 million need right there that we could deliver. Minnesota is blessed with many lakes and rivers that require crossings for products to get to market and for people to get to jobs. The thousands of bridges and local road connections form a transportation network that serves to connect people from all across the state. Funding roads and bridges, we believe, is a true core government function and one that is clearly needed for businesses that ship products across the state to remain competitive and for our state's economy to grow. On behalf of the Minnesota County Engineers Association, the Association of Minnesota Counties, and the Transportation Alliance, I urge you to support legislation that provides an adequate level of funding to make significant progress in completing these identified projects through both the Local Road Improvement Program and the Local Bridge Program. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for your testimony. Next testifier, Senator Peterson, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senators. My name is Scott Merrick. I'm Executive Director of St. Cloud Area Planning Organization, and I'm also here representing the Minnesota Transportation Alliance, an alliance of over 250 transportation advocates in the state. And actually, we're just coming across the street today from Transportation Day at the Kelly Inn, where we've had an excellent turnout. The governor spoke. We actually had over 200 participants at that event. I want to thank Senator Peterson for authoring this legislation. With the growing demand on the transportation system, increasingly limited local budgets, local governments are struggling to maintain and improve critical county highways, city streets, and township roadways. In the St. Cloud APO area, for instance, we have documented unmet local needs of $30 million annually. The local system is critical for shipping products and moving people. All trips begin and end on the local road. All bond authorizations for local roads and bridges prior to the 2011 session have been spent. The bonding bill that passed last summer provided $33 million for the local bridge program and $10 million for the local road improvement program. Local governments submitted over $61 million of requests for the $10 million of road funds that were provided, which leaves over a $50 million gap from the current solicitation. For the local bridge program, projects have been identified for at least half of the funding to date, and the rest of the funding will be spent encumbered within the next 60 days. An important point with the local road improvement program, as an example, leveraged $34 million of other funds, other federal and local funds. Funding for both the local bridge program and the local road improvement program has been and will continue to be spent in a short period of time, as most projects submitted are ready to be completed during the 2012 construction season. The need for funding far outweighs the available resources, but bonding for these programs will help local governments finance needed projects much more quickly and get people back to work. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Merrick. I see you have two additional testifiers, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. My name is Doug Weishaar. I'm a vice president at WSB & Associates, an engineering firm, and I'm representing ACEC Minnesota today, the Association of Consulting Engineering Companies. So I just want to comment that we are here representing about 160 engineering firms across our state, and we have about 6,000 employees employed here in Minnesota providing for infrastructure improvements across our state. Engineering companies and the rest of our economy, for that matter, really need investments in our infrastructure to be able to be healthy and grow. It isn't just the jobs that engineering firms are able to sustain through these investments, but actually the investments support other private sector firms here in the state. And I'm going to give you a couple of examples. One I visited recently with Cambria, the people that build the composite countertops. They have a facility along Highway 169 down at Le Sueur. They have an operation problem in that their access is restricted because of safety reasons. And to provide safe access to the rest of the system, they, in fact, have an expense in operations of about $250,000 a year. That's $250,000 a year that's lost to our economy simply because we don't have the appropriate safety mechanisms to accommodate their operations efficiently. I visited with Schwann's. The president recently said that, and of course we know they're located in Marshall, Minnesota, greater Minnesota. They're not competing here in Minnesota with companies here in Minnesota. They're not competing here in the United States with companies here in the United States. Their number one competitor is in Switzerland. And we need to be able to provide a company like Schwann's with the ability to compete safely and efficiently across our system. A friend of mine once said that every load in Minnesota either starts or stops on a local road. That speaks to why the bills that we are talking about here today are so important to our overall system, because to move Minnesota, to provide for the safe and efficient use of our system out there, to make that healthy economy, not only, again, in the transportation network as a whole, but across our entire economy, we need your investments in infrastructure, and particularly in the local road and bridge funds that we're talking about today. So I guess that would close my testimony, and I thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for this opportunity.
I guess we haven't offered the committee the opportunity to ask questions. I should have done that with the other testifiers up, but any questions? Okay, well, thank you for your testimony, and Mr. Larson.
Mr. Chairman and members, thank you for this opportunity to talk to you today about these two very important bills. We want to thank Senator Peterson for bringing them forward and for the committee's indulgence in reviewing them. But in following up, Mr. Weisar, I'm just pretty much going to echo some of the same things that he has been saying. Doug Weisar has forgotten more about transportation than I'll ever know. So this state is losing money because of the inefficiencies in its transportation delivery system. I hope you'll look at the letter that's in your packet. It's from our organization, I should say, Dan Larson, Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, for 23 rural counties in greater Minnesota that advocate for rural concerns, one of which, of course, is an adequate transportation system. And right now, we are going backwards. This is nothing new to this committee, but we are losing money and losing the ability to compete. I asked Engineer Welly, John Welly from Aiken County, to provide an example of what he could do if he had additional dollars that would be funded through the bonding from this program for the local bridges and the local roads. And, of course, he gave me two. He said he could have gone on, but and virtually any of my other county engineers could have written a similar letter. But just a representative here is timber is an $8.6 billion industry in this state. In rural Minnesota, it is critical. And he points out that he's got a bridge on a critical timber sale that the 49-ton loads could not use, resulting in a divergence of 24 miles around that bridge to get to a bridge that they could use. So if you take that inefficiency in that one county and multiply it by the multiples that he has in Aiken County and all of the other counties around the state, you have a significant problem. So the need is there. I want to thank again Senator Peterson for bringing this issue forward and for us and giving us an opportunity to highlight and profile the need. So thank you. I urge you to look favorably upon each of these bills.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Larson. Just so the members know, we are just reviewing all of the departments and members' bonding requests, and we won't be acting on them. These particular bills are already in the Capital Investment Committee and will be heard by them and considered. But certainly we appreciate the testimony and the information for our committee as we contribute to making the decisions on the capital investment decisions that will be made in the future. So thank you, Mr. Larson, for being here. Appreciate it. Then we have Mr. Vanosik.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Rob Vanasek here on behalf of the Minnesota Association of Townships today. We want to thank Senator Peterson for bringing forward both Senate File 1685 and Senate File 1686. We're in strong support of each of the bills. The Association of Townships supports fundings for both the Minnesota Bridge Bonding Program and the Local Road Improvement Program. Town bridges are an integral part of the state's transportation infrastructure. They're critical to a safe, reliable transportation system, and failure to repair or replace a deficient bridge can result in increased risk to public safety, costly detours, delayed transport of goods, interrupted tourism, and so on. Further, the replacement and upgrading of bridges and roads are required to implement a 10-ton road standard as we're trying to get increased goods from farm and the woods to market. That road system, as you know, is only as strong as its weakest bridge. The estimated cost of just of repairing just deficient township bridges on the state priority list does exceed well over $60 million. With that, I'll conclude my remarks, Mr. Chairman and committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vanasek. And the other Mr. Vanasek is at the table.
Mr. Chair, I don't know, is it proper for a father and son tag team here to work on us here?
Senator DeKreif, I'm not sure that it's fair for us, but probably for them. We'll acknowledge that and appreciate you coming.
Thank you. And you'll have to be careful because when you ask for a Vanasek, you sometimes get two. My name is Bob Vanasek, and I represent the Minnesota Inter-County Association, which is a group of 13 counties, five of which are in the metropolitan area, and the other eight are in areas where the regional centers of the state are, for example, Olmsted, Blue Earth, Stearns, St. Louis. Very briefly, we're here to also indicate to you our very strong support for both of these programs. They've been in place for many years. They've been successful. They are the projects are determined by criteria. The decisions are made by professionals, and they have worked, and I think programs that have served the state of Minnesota very well. And while I'm here, Mr. Chairman, I'd also like to indicate our support for your bill. That'll be coming up later in the agenda, and that has to do with the local road wetland replacement program. Again, that's another bill that the legislature has historically funded, and it is a very efficiently run program, and we hope that you look favorably on Chairman Gimsey's bill as well. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vanasek. And Senator Peterson, I can't help but make a commentary a little bit in that when people think of a capital investment and bonding bill, they do think probably as one of the first things that should be a part of that is transportation issues, and roads and bridges certainly are an investment for our future. Not that I happen to have the ear of the capital investment vice chair in the seat here, but we would very much appreciate if you would look favorably upon these requests, and as you can see, they are very important, and we will be advocating for them as we go through the process. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Senator Dibble.
Can I just, on behalf of the DFL members, and I see the co-authors on the bill, three of five are DFL members, so can I just say ditto to what you just said. I know we're not taking formal action, but this bill and the next bill in particular, if there's a way for us to give special support and love to as it is brought up in the Capital Investments Committee. These are clearly fundamentally important provisions to be included in the Capital Investments Committee. It's been long-standing tradition, and I think the testifiers very clearly articulated this is the kind of thing that has both the long-term benefit for our state and its economy, but also really puts folks to work, especially some of the smaller contractors at the local level. So it's these are both very important bills, very important requests. So appreciate the chief authorship, and And as they go on their way to capital investments, you'll have our strong support as well.
It's good to know that we'll have strong support on both sides of the aisle for this, and I think we can all agree that they're very important investments. So thank you, Senator Peterson.
Thank you.
Next bill is Senate File 1439, Senator Goodwin. I saw it. Senator Goodwin.
I think this is on. Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill that I'm presenting today, I think, is not a controversial, with controversial contents, and helps schools and children all over the state of Minnesota. The bill establishes the Safe Routes to School program, state program. We have had the same SRTS program in from federal money, and now we are looking for some state money because of the fact that there are so many requests that we can't fulfill and so many worthy requests that we're not able to help. Many projects have been done under this SRTS program already, like creation of sidewalks, improvement of pedestrian bicycle crossing areas around schools, on-street and off-street bicycle facilities, off-street pedestrian facilities, and traffic diversion improvements. So the object of the bill really is to make it safer for children to get to school so that they will walk and not use the buses as much for health reasons as much as anything else. I think there are the past funds have gone basically 68% rural and about 30% metro. So I think you have quite a bit of information in your packets, and we're honored to have some high school students that are working to lobby for this bill and would like to make a comment about it, if it's okay with the chair.
Certainly, Senator Goodwin. I also understand that you have an A1 amendment, I believe it is.
Yes, I understand Representative Cruz is going to introduce the A1 amendment.
Senator Cruz might be willing to do that for you.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Still get stuck in the House sometimes.
No, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodwin. I like this amendment, so I'm going to offer it anyway. I would like to offer the A1 amendment, and I don't know, Mr. Chairman, if you would like me to address that amendment right now or wait till we have it passed out.
Just give us a moment here. We'll have it passed out. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Amendment. Chairman and members. Very briefly, to summarize what the amendment does, I'm a firm believer in all forms of education, including private schools. What this amendment essentially does is also include private schools in the program and also brings conformity along with the federal SRTS guidelines. Very briefly, all it does is simply change the word. It eliminates the word public so that what would remain is just schools and would be inclusive of all schools, and then changes the word to governing body instead of school districts. So that what that does is essentially includes all of our private schools.
Senator Goodwin, to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would consider that a friendly amendment. I think we want children to be safe no matter which schools they go to, so I accept that as a friendly amendment.
Senator Reinert?
Mr. Chair, and for our legal counsel, and I'm sure the senators have all crossed this bridge, but just for my peace of mind, typically we think of bonding as having to be done with public organizations and public assets. You know, the infrastructure leading to a private school is public, so, I mean, I'm supportive of the direction, but I just want to make sure that legally we can, bad pun, go down that road.
Ms. Berzofsky?
Mr. Chair, this This bill is a little bit different from the other bonding bills that we've been looking at because it does create a program in statute. And as part of the program, there are two different accounts that are created. That language begins on 2.7. It's subdivision 3. And the account that's well, the A account is for bond proceeds, and the B account is just for general fund appropriations. So I guess it doesn't, it would be possible to make a general fund appropriation for something that would not be bondable. So I just see the way this bill is structured that there are two possible different approaches to funding the program. But the program will be in statute, and presumably the bond proceeds will be used only for bondable purposes.
Senator Cruz?
And, Mr. Chairman, I also wanted to just give a couple of examples of areas where we do this already. School districts must also provide bus transportation to private school kids. I would imagine that this is very, very similar to that. And there's also certain tax credits that we offer in the education system that are also available to our private school students.
Okay. Ms. Berzovsky, something to add?
Mr. Chair, excuse me, and I wanted to add that on 2.11, the bond proceeds fund account description, it says all uses of funds from the account must be for publicly owned property, so that the bonding piece is restricted to publicly owned property.
Right. Mr. Chair, Ms. Berlofsky, thank you for calling my attention to 2.11. That does give me some peace of mind.
Any other questions? All right, Senator Goodwin, your testifiers, please.
Yes, I'd like to introduce Patrick and Samantha. Okay.
Hey, welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
I'm Samantha Kelso. I'm a senior at Mounds View High School in Arden Hills.
And I'm Patrick Sullivan, also a senior at Mounds View High School. Our concern today is regarding a approximately 500-meter stretch of land along Highway 96 near the intersection of Highway 10. You can refer to the map on page 7 of the handout. This small strip of missing sidewalk is what's preventing many people from the Shoreview and northeast Arden Hills and North Oaks area from being able to bike to school.
The following images are some of the pictures we took along the road that show the conditions of the missing sidewalk in the road. I am the president of Synergy, which is an environmental and community service group at our school. And last year, I tried to organize a bike to school day for Synergy members and other students that wanted an environmental alternative to driving. The administration would not allow us to do this due to the safety hazards that the sidewalk posed. One of our friends also bikes to school fairly regularly, and she often has to lift her bike up over a guardrail, which poses another safety concern. The guardrail is shown in page 9 by a red arrow.
And this is not the only safety hazard in this area. When the bike trail ends, bikers are forced to bike against oncoming traffic, as you can see in page 8, on a very gravelly surface. And one of my friends and neighbors was nearly hit here, and his brother was hit a few years ago. And the hazards presented by this area prevent me from biking to school, even though I live within 4 miles. And being unable to drive, there are not very many other alternatives besides busing.
At the beginning of this year, Patrick and I decided to take action to help solve this problem. We emailed Metropolitan Council members and other state representatives. We also talked to teachers and other faculty members and students to see if we had their support on this issue.
One of the ways we raised awareness was through the school newspaper, the Mounds View Viewer. We were featured in a front page article raising awareness of this issue. We also passed around signature sheets around classes, and we got many student signatures and over 15 faculty signatures for this because many teachers also bike to school.
Okay, thank you.
Very nicely done. Thank you for your testimony on this bill. Appreciate you being here. Senator Cruz renews his motion on the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Next testifier.
Okay.
Senator Goodwin.
We have, before we do that, I just want to say there's also a note in your packet about the different groups that are supporting this bill, including the American Cancer, American Heart, Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, Minnesota School Boards and Principals, and Healthy Kids Coalition. It's got a lot of broad statewide support. And my next testifier is... Okay, Mr. Gary Anger.
Mr. Anger.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much for allowing me to present to you this afternoon. It's quite an honor. When I started as an educator over 25 years ago, I had no idea that I'd be talking on transportation issues. But I did know that I'd be serving students and families, as all of you do in your districts. And so it's a great honor to be here this afternoon. It's always tough to follow such eloquent students, but I get to do that as a job every day. So thank you again. I'm here to share with you some of the successes that have happened at Red Pine Elementary School in Eagan. I'm the principal at Red Pine Elementary School. We're a school of 960 kindergarten through fifth grade students. When I began at Red Pine a little over 9 years ago, we were at about 800 students. And so with that growth, we had quite a problem. And the problem was too much traffic and some dangerous passages around our school. So we turned to Safe Routes to School to help us deal with the situations we had. So I'm briefly going to tell you about the four pieces that have impacted us at Red Pine. First of all, safety. Second of all, physical activity. Third, the benefit to the community. And fourth, academic achievement, which of course is what my job is all about. Each day when I began as principal at Red Pine, we had over 100 vehicles entering our parking lot in about a 10 to 15 minute span in the morning, and those same 100 vehicles exiting at the end of the day. It was very, very dangerous. And through our Safe Routes to School strategies, we have cut the number of vehicles to less than 50 each day at our school over the last 4 years. We've calmed traffic. We've made many safe travel improvements. And these safe travel improvements, of course, first and foremost, are for our children walking and biking to school, but also encouraging their parents to walk and bike to school with them. It's also increased safety for motorized vehicles around our school, as some of our traffic calming strategies have done. I mentioned that I also wanted to talk about physical activity. And as you know, childhood obesity is quite an epidemic in our country, and kids just simply weren't walking or biking to school when I first was principal at Red Pine. With Safe Routes to School, again, over the past 4 years, we've more than doubled our number of bikers and walkers, which is a pretty amazing thing. We've instituted recess mileage clubs. We've held walking and biking to school events that have now been replicated by schools all throughout our state. And again, most of you in your districts have probably heard of some such similar events. The third point I had mentioned was the benefit to the community. We truly feel that we've reduced busing costs through the wider pickup ranges that have happened. So as school districts have done some budget cutting with wider pickup areas, we've really needed to make an effort to encourage kids to bike and walk to school rather than have their parents drive them to school. So as we've reduced busing costs, we're also hoping that that's reducing driving costs for parents and, again, increasing healthy activities for kids. Other benefits to the community have included large events that we've held, including a yearly health and fitness fair, bike drives for students without bikes, and a summer activity card for children and families to participate in our community. We've made great partnerships with local businesses and government, and this has just been really good, a great example of good government, the Safe Routes to School movement. We now have a health and wellness committee that's made up of parents throughout our community, and they are incredibly active planning events monthly at our school. And most importantly, we really have healthy kids and families at our school. And the last thing I wanted to touch on was the academic achievement. We've done traffic education with our student. We've done student training on bike safety, and we know that those are parts of Safe Routes to School, and those are some of the pieces that are involved in the work we do.
Our school has got every reason to have different groups identified on the naughty list or the AYP list. We have a very diverse range of students that we pull from, but we really feel that Safe Routes to School has had a positive academic impact on our children. We've had zero of our subgroups land on the AYP list since I've been principal at Red Pine, and we really feel like doing healthy things for kids. As you know, there's so much research that supports that when we're healthy, we perform better academically. While we've done lots of non-infrastructure work at Red Pine, like your communities, we have infrastructure needs that could even do more to make it safer and encourage more and more kids and families to walk and bike to school. So we do, again, appreciate you listening. We feel like this comprehensive approach is the right approach at increasing the number of kids walking and biking to school in a safe way. And it's a very cost-beneficial approach. Again, I want to repeat, it's great government, and it's a great investment in children and families. So thank you for letting me advocate on behalf of them today.
Okay, thank you, Principal Anger. Next up, Senator Goodwin.
I think it's fine to open for questions, and then I might bring another person up that that's very, very familiar with the bill.
Senator Howell.
That's okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Goodwin, I had an opportunity to speak to some folks on this, and I'm just wondering about a competitive process here, and I'm wondering if this bill, the language here, allows for what I'm looking for is some local participation to kind of stretch those dollars. You know, whether it's a 80-20 matching, maybe it doesn't necessarily have to be that. But, you know, we've got such limited resources, and this isn't a large amount of money here. You know, I'm kind of looking for communities that really want to kind of put their money where their mouth is and keep leaders that are going to stand up and say that we need this in our communities, because there is going to be some opposition for homeowners that don't want an assessment or don't want to clean a sidewalk in the wintertime. But I'm wondering what thought has been given to that competitive process or at least give the MnDOT some direction on that we do want people, you know, if they want to submit a proposal and they're willing to pay 40% of a project or 20% of the project or even 10% of the project.
Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator, that's a real good point. It has been looked at to do a local match, but what was found was that basically then there would be poorer schools and maybe particularly some schools in greater Minnesota that would not be eligible then for this because they wouldn't have the match. So that's the biggest concern at this point. And I'm going to let my testifier here talk.
Welcome to the committee. To the committee, if you could identify yourself, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Rachel Callanan, and I work at the American Heart Association, and we are here in support of Senate File 1439. Senator Howe, in answer to your question about the match requirement, we did ask our coalition for input on that, and the coalition felt that we agree with the goal of stretching the money further. A concern was that we, at this early stage of establishing this program, we didn't want to exclude any potential projects from coming in, but we would be interested in a discussion with MnDOT to see if in their criteria they could set a preference for projects that bring in a local match. So instead of changing the language of our legislation to require a match, to build it into the criteria as a preference and rank those projects with the local match higher in that criteria.
Senator Hall, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's a great direction to go, because I really do think, you know, this comes down to actually what would be assessed is, you know, maybe the city would pick up part of it. Maybe, you know, sometimes the city picks up a share of that sidewalk assessment, and sometimes it's property owners. But I do think it's a good idea. It does a couple things. You know, it stretches the dollars. We can get more projects done. And it also shows a commitment on the part of the local people to put forth. And I want to thank the young testifiers there for getting involved in their community and trying to make things safer as far as going to and from school. So Thank you very much. I thought you did a great job testifying.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And, Mr. Chair, I want to actually support Senator Howe's suggestion. You know, I actually don't think it'd be bad to get some language in the bill, at least as a as an indication of the legislation. But we don't have to do that if that creates heartburn and slows down at least the establishment of this program. I suspect, Mr. Chair, and Senator Goodwin, that in most cases there will be some form of local participation that could be fairly easily demonstrated. I can't imagine that these dollars will go far enough to be able to build, soup to nuts, everything that would be needed to create a safe route to school in even one community. And typically these things are occurring as roads are being worked on anyways and doing those additional livability and safety enhancements to create the more viable opportunities for kids to actually walk to school. So I think it's a good suggestion. Thanks for bringing it up. And I think, even if it's handled administratively by MnDOT, I think it'd be easy for local communities, whether it be the municipality or the school district or the private school, to demonstrate that there is local leadership and local effort. I just, Mr. Chair, while I have the floor for 1 second, I just wanted to let folks know kind of where I've been on this bill. People might be surprised that, I've generally been supportive. It's kind of in keeping with the idea of complete streets and creating more livable communities for everyone to be able to use our roadways and streets. But I was never quite Rachel Callanan. Previously my constituent, continues to be my good friend, was in my office a couple weeks ago talking about this, and I just had never really dialed into the health piece, which, we hear a lot about. And I understood the safety and the livability and the quality of life pieces, but a little skeptical and hadn't spent any time considering the health piece of this. Because, I used to walk to school. I don't know that I was more or less healthy because of that. Just didn't seem like that big a deal. But when you read the data and that, if young people are walking, up to a mile to school, it takes care of, 2/3 of their recommended daily level of activity. And the health data is actually quite compelling, as it turns out, and another good reason to support this idea. So, good liberal like me likes this kind of stuff, making sure we're doing streets the way they should be done and not, just simply not like the photos that the young people showed us, I mean, which are horrifying. But then just layering on that health piece, so I think is very compelling. And for folks who... we're talking about their skepticism of healthcare reform because it's not driving down costs and utilization and all that stuff, which I actually don't agree with. But for people who actually believe that, this is how you drive down healthcare costs and healthcare utilization. This is a good step to take in the realm of public health as well.
All right. Thank you, Senator Dibble. Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first of all, to Samantha and Patrick, I noticed in the newspaper article it says that you're both only 12, and I find that hard to believe. You're both so well-spoken. Is that
grade
the case? Your pardon?
Grade 12.
It refers to grade 12.
Grade 12. The article says makes it look it just as Patrick Sullivan, 12, and Samantha Kaz. They missed the grade. Very mature.
They're out there.
Senator Goodwin, I have a question. Perhaps Ms. Callahan could answer this about the language on page 2, subdivision 4, lines 216 to 223. It seems like that entire subdivision is just kind of a declarative statement, and I'm curious what the purpose of having that in the language is.
Ms. Callahan?
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure. My guess is that may be just to ensure that it was referring to the general obligation funds and not or bond funds rather than general fund. But maybe staff could help clarify that.
Ms. Berzovsky?
Mr. Chair and members, I actually didn't draft this bill, so I can't really speak to the intent of that language, but I think that the testifier is is correct that it's trying to make the point that that the type of improvement that's contemplated in this bill is bondable.
Okay, thank you.
Anything else, Senator Stephen?
Right. Mr. Chair.
Senator Perry.
Thank you very much. I can see why Senator Jungbauer is on this bill, too, but we don't have to go into his escapades, you know, with that.
I
would hope that something like this, you know, I was frustrated when I was back on the city council in Waseca when this was brought up, because I hope this kind of, you know, the support that this has kind of shoots a shot across the bow to every city council in the state of Minnesota, because we all fall victim to letting the developers off from putting in the sidewalks. And we fought that battle tooth and nail. And I, for one, love sidewalks, because I think there's a few of us around this table that grew up walking to school or walking on sidewalks, and the neighbors were saying hi and they were keeping track of you and all of that. But because we were so concerned about cost of street projects and new development, we gave a pass to developers. And now I think we're feeling that effect of years of doing that. And I would hope the city councils across would start taking a look at that and saying, hey, wait a minute. If we're concerned about the health and the safety, it's not like I remember walking on a gravel street without curb and gutter when I was growing up, but that was different back then. More traffic, more cars. And I think we have to be very cautious as we go through this. Yeah, a long time ago. I think we have to be real cautious. I think this is something that cities need to take a good, long, hard look at as they develop, and there are still some that are developing in areas that sidewalk has got a very good social aspect to it, and health-wise and walking. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure I'll take some grief from my developer friends, but, you know, truly, I think this is good. It's a good bill.
Thank you, Senator Perry. And this developer won't give you any grief. We couldn't agree more. But where I grew up, we were lucky to get out of the alley. So we'll move on from there. Senator Goodwin, any other testifiers?
No, but we're open for any more questions if anybody has any.
If not, we'll go ahead and lay Senate File 1439 on the table for possible inclusion in our Omnibus 2 bill. Thank you for your presentation. Thank you for being here today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Great. Next up is Senate File 120. This must be a really old bill. Senator Miller. Senator Miller, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Everybody's leaving. I thought maybe committee was over there.
You get that feeling once in a while.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Minnesota Ports Association have worked together to determine what level of funding is needed to recapitalize the Port Development Assistance Program. And that's what we're here to talk about today is Senate File 120, the Minnesota Ports Assistance Program. This program allows our public ports to maintain or improve their essential infrastructure. The legislature has provided funding for this program on a steady basis in the past. A significant backlog of port infrastructure projects exist, and we need to establish a consistent flow of funds to the program so that the ports can continue to provide the efficient movement of cargo on our waterway systems. I've with me today Ms. Lori Lauder, representing the Minnesota Ports Association, to testify on behalf of this funding request. Ms. Lauder will explain the important role of this program and talk about why we need this infrastructure and folks and members. This is an important jobs bill to keep the economy and keep our goods moving along the rivers.
Thank you, Senator Miller. And Ms. Lauder, if you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Lori Lauder. I am the Director of Business and Intergovernmental Affairs at the St. Paul Port Authority, and the Port Authority is one of the four members of the Ports Association. The Ports Association is comprised of Duluth, Winona, Red Wing, and St. Paul Port Authorities. We've been in existence for almost 20 years. Mr. Chair, I'd like to provide some brief comments that provide an overview of why we need these funds and what we've accomplished in the past as far as infrastructure improvements. I want to thank Senator Miller for being our chief author as well. Appreciate it. I wanted to thank also the legislature for previous funding for this important program. This has helped us maintain our critical infrastructure in the Duluth Seaway Port Authority and the other three harbors. It also means that we've been able to facilitate the movement of products into and out of the state of Minnesota through the Great Lakes and through the upper Mississippi waterway systems. Our port facilities, Mr. Chair, provide a gateway to the world for a variety of Minnesota commodities. Their ability to move products by water does the following things in brief. It saves a tremendous amount of wear and tear on our highways, consumes less fuel, reduces highway congestion, improves transportation economics to the shippers of Minnesota commodities and products that move into and out of our ports. And I wanted to just explain a little bit about the commodities. There are many of them, but some examples include salt, grain, steel, cement, wood products, taconite, and coal. The port's infrastructure, and we're experiencing this across all of our port authorities, quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, it's old. It's been aging quite a bit. A lot of these dock walls, for example, have been built in the 1930s, the 1950s. They are outliving their useful life without significant reconstruction. They're typically between 50 and 75 years old. Our priority moving forward, Mr. Chairman, is to focus on our dock walls. We've done a lot of this in the past, thanks to the legislative appropriation. We appreciate that, and we need to do more in the future. Here's some quick examples of what we've accomplished in the past, and I thought I'd pick a few from each of the four ports. As far as Red Wing, they have relocated their cargo handling facilities for greater safety and transportation efficiencies. In Duluth, they have repaired several areas of their dock walls, and they have also reconstructed road access to the port facilities, which greatly improve cargo handling capacities. In Winona, they have replaced barge mooring facilities. They have rehabilitated their existing commercial dock wall, and they have completed an important dredging project, which is part of a multimodal transportation improvement project. And here in St. Paul, we have constructed a new dock wall in a portion of our St. Paul Harbor that up to this point we have been unable to use for commercial navigation. We have also rehabilitated warehouse roofs, and we have also repaired and reconstructed several areas of dock walls that have been in disrepair due to aging. In summary, Mr. Chairman, very little of this work could have been accomplished without the financial participation through this Ports Development Assistance Program. But we have a lot more work to do. We have a lot more improvements to accomplish. It's very critical to maintain this public infrastructure for the good of river shipping, for the good of commercial navigation that provides these products to the worldwide markets. And finally, Mr. Chairman, with your continued support, we can address the backlog of projects that we have, and we can provide for continued low-cost transshipment of Minnesota commodities via our waterways. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Lauder, and Senator Miller, for bringing this bill to us and offering your testimony. The Port Authority and the work that they do is probably sometimes not very glamorous, like building dock walls and keeping the flow going, but no doubt vital to our transportation system in Minnesota. And appreciate your carrying the bill, Senator Miller, and moving this forward. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Miller and Ms. Lauder. And I just wanted to, Mr. Chair, you actually kind of hit on the point I wanted to make. You commented earlier about the importance of transportation infrastructure in a bonding bill, and this is our oldest transportation infrastructure. You know, I have the pleasure of being on this bill with Senator Miller and Senator Howe, and it's because we all have this thing in common, water. And our communities are some of the oldest in the state because they were founded along transportation, commerce, and they still are. And one of the things I'm especially proud of in Duluth, and is kind of a little-known fact, is we are the largest inland port in the country. And I just wanted to take a moment to support the bill. Obviously, you know, if it's grain or taconite or lime or coal, we ship it literally by the boatload. And members, anytime you want to come up and see one of those Lakers in action, I'd love to set that tour up for you. It's a pretty impressive operation. And the infrastructure maintenance, you know, we as a committee have looked at roads, and we know that MnDOT classifies our roads in, you know, good, poor, and very poor. And in some of our ports, that infrastructure is really getting largely into the very poor category. And I think we need to be continually plugging away at it. So thank you, Senator Miller. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator DeCryf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Miller and Ms. Lauder, for bringing this forward. Where I haven't had an opportunity to visit all of the ports in Minnesota, I have been up and looked at the port in Duluth for a possible place to offload one of the large transformers that the company I represent moves. And in some cases, it's difficult to move out of that port because there's some questions on the, you know, the seawall. And so I do think we have to continue to make sure that our ports are up to speed. That is a critical source of moving some of these very, very large loads that can't be moved by rail, for instance. A lot of what we move is too heavy to move down the roads across the country, and it's sometimes too big to move over the rail. You just can't move really wide pieces or tall pieces over the rail. So our ports are critical to Minnesota. So thank you.
Senator Seaman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Miller, thank you for bringing this bill forward. I just wanted to get more clarification on what dredging can take place under the under this bill, or if the Commissioner of Transportation, whenever they do dredging, is it just within the port area? And the reason the immediate port area, the reason I ask is because I know that there's some fill-in and silt accumulation that's occurring in parts of the river that near where I represent along the Mississippi River, and I'm curious if any of this money could be used to help achieve that goal of widening the main river channel. I'd assume that the money that you're referencing, though, is only used for the actual port itself, but if you could clarify.
Mr. Chair and Senator Seaman, yes, to my knowledge, it's for the port infrastructure, not for the dredging.
Senator Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Miller. Obviously, I appreciate Ms. Lauder's testimony on the moving of the bulkheads in Red Wing. That added to a lot of safety. And I don't think a lot of people pay attention if you don't live along the river or drive along the river and see those barges. But one barge, one big tow that has 15 barges on it, replaces 900 semis on our roads. And that's equivalent to replacing 200 rail train on our railroads too. So it's a huge impact that our barge system has on our Minnesota economy, and the money that we're talking about here to at least update our infrastructure along the river is desperately needed. So. I hope that we can have bipartisan support on this and move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Howe. I think Ms. Lauder, were you going to comment?
I think those were all good points, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you. Chair. I think Senator Seaman?
Just a quick question. Do you have any idea, Ms. Lauder, what the overall need is? This is $10 million, but do you have an idea? Maybe you said it and I missed it, but what the overall need at the ports is in terms of infrastructure?
Ms. Lauder?
Mr. Chair and Senator Seaman, yes, we do. As I mentioned, we have a backlog. We've had a rolling backlog of projects over the past 20 years. I actually have a list here of projects that are top priority projects for each of the port authorities. And to a NAT, the total estimate is $10,700,000. And so the need is significant in each of the ports.
Thank you, Ms. Lauder. I think in the essence of time, I think we'll move on here. We appreciate you being here and giving us your insights into this bill. And good luck to you, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you.
Next up is Senator Wolf with Senate File 413. Senator Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In the interest of time, I am simply going to introduce our first couple of testifiers, the mayor of Moundsview, Joe Flaherty, and city administrator, Jim Erickson, and I'll let them explain the situation and what the request is. And then we also have three residents who would like to testify as well.
Okay. If you could keep your testimony concise, we would appreciate it. We'd like to move these bills through. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you. I am Joe Flaherty, the mayor of City of Moundsview. I'll make mine very quick, just kind of an introduction. I want to thank the chair and the committee members for listening to us today. City of Moundsview, we have a situation that affects approximately on the low side 6% of our residents and probably on the high side 8 to 9% of our residents. We've been dealing with this issue for over 10 years. It goes all the way back that I've been on the council slash mayor, Representative Bernardi, Representative Tilbury, Senator Betzold, and now Senator Wolf. So we've been dealing with this sound wall issue in our LaPorte neighborhoods for quite a few years. Some of the figures that are being thrown around here presented to this committee, I'm almost embarrassed to bring up the little amount that we're asking for, but we are very patient in the city of Moundsview, and we appreciate your time to listen to what we have to say. I'd like to turn it over to the city administrator for the city of Moundsview, and Jim will give you some more details as far as history on the sound wall.
Welcome to the committee. If you could identify yourself for the record, please.
Certainly, Mr. Chair. Jim Erickson, city administrator for the city of Moundsview. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is an issue, as the mayor indicated, has been percolating within the city for a number of years. I'll point out that 12 years ago, we had about 28,000 vehicles per trip or vehicles per day on Highway 10. A couple of years later, when Senator Safir Chaudhry was involved in the process, we had some correspondence from MnDOT indicating that at that time in 2001, the noise standards were already being exceeded. The Minnesota daytime noise standards were exceeded back at that point when the traffic levels were much less than what they are today. And looking forward, we're presently experiencing 75 to 80,000 vehicle trips per day on Highway 10. And as Highway 10 merges with 35W, that increases to more than 100,000 vehicle trips per day. And that creates a lot of noise. The residents that live near the highway, the LaPorte neighborhood, the Colonial Village Manufactured Home Park, it gets to be a very very disruptive aspect of their daily lives. So we're here, we're asking for support, and we appreciate Senator Wolf bringing this forward. This is something that clearly would benefit the health, safety, welfare of the residents, and I might be so bold as to say the sanity of the residents. If you've been out in this area, it's a huge distraction. So this is something we do support. This is something we feel is well overdue. And I guess I'd like to turn it over to a couple of the testifiers, residents, Bill Urbanski and Tom Cassell, and then we also have the manager of the Colonial Village Manufactured Home Park here this afternoon as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just so members know that this bill would not be going to capital investment. The funds that would be involved in this are trunk highway bonds or an expenditure out of the trunk highway fund. So what we will do is lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the supplemental budget bill if the committee so decides at some point that they would like to see this move forward. So, Senator Dibble.
Oh, thanks, Mr. I just think it's ironic because you got a neighborhood in Minneapolis that doesn't want their sound wall and is pretty cranky about it. And that neighborhood that does want, can they just swap the sound walls?
I kind of wonder. We've heard about that.
Yeah, so.
Reduce, reuse, recycle.
Yeah. This is, Mr. Chair, I'm actually kind of sympathetic to this. And you've got a state facility that's creating impact. We should deal with it.
We should. I agree. So, like I say, we'll hold the. Hold this over and see what we can do with it if we come with a supplemental budget bill. At that time, we'll probably rehear the bill. Glad that most of you are here to hear it now. And then we'll, at that time, take testimony from MnDOT as to why this hasn't been accomplished in the past and delve a little deeper into the details of this particular situation. Senator Reiner.
Mr. Chair, just procedurally, should we sense the bill, the committee's going to retain possession? Do we need to move the bill? If we do, I'm happy to do that. I see a head shaking no.
There's a lot of head nodding and shaking going on over here, isn't there? Yeah. Well, there's a couple of different ways to do it, but I think what we'll do is lay it on the table, and then at the time we rehear it, in the event we do, then we'll have Senator Wolf move the bill. Okay. Please state your name for the record. Welcome to the committee.
My name is Bill Urbanski, and I'd like to thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for allowing me to testify. I'm a member of the Soundwall Committee. I represent 57 residents in the immediate area, just adjacent to U.S. Highway 10. And I also, in the fall of 2010, did a walking survey of adjacent neighborhoods around our immediate neighborhood that's mostly impacted by the lack of a sound wall. And in that process of going door to door, I was able to get upwards to 200 signatures on a petition requesting that a sound wall be constructed. And some of those residents who signed it were over a mile away from the actual road, but they still thought that the sound coming from that road was a severe enough irritant that they thought that we needed to do something about this. Personally, I live on Sherwood Road, which is about a quarter of a mile from the road, and I have, over the years, have had interruptions of family gatherings. Friday evenings, we usually have a prayer group at our house sometimes, and we use our screen porch. And in the summertime, as the vacation people are taking off to get to their cabins, that road is full all the way up until 9 in the evening. And a few times we actually had to call off the meeting and move indoors because of the sound. We couldn't hear each other.
Okay. Well, thank you for your testimony.
Oops. And I really am thankful that Senator Wolf is moving forward on this bill, and I strongly support her, and I hope you support her as well.
Very good. Thank you. If you could identify yourself for the committee.
I'm Tom Cassell, and I live in Moundsview. My family moved there in 1987, approximately 110 yards from a small county road, which is now Highway 10. When we moved there, it was nice, quiet. But it, obviously, in the past number of years, it's gotten more noisy. We conduct garage sales at our house quite regularly, and we have over 200 cars come by to visit our garage sale. And we have many, many comments from these people that don't even live in the area. What is all that noise? And the noise, obviously, is from the traffic on Highway 10. And then since the building of Medtronic facility right across the highway, we also have noticed an increase in the bounce back noise. It heads north and bounces onto Medtronic and then back into the neighborhood again. Also notice that not only is there noise, but there's an increase of dust. And I'm curious as to whether that dust might be the reason that I sneeze so much in the morning and late afternoon. It's just a possibility. About 4 years ago, there was some extra money available, I understand, for some sound walling, and they actually did some sound wall, and it covered the area of the Ramsey County compost and some swamp and woods. I didn't understand why they put a sound wall at the compost and woods rather than in the quarter mile where there were some residences. Never did get a good answer on that. Recently in the city of Moundsview, we also were experiencing some very, very bad streets. And we had learned to live with that, but we also learned that we needed to do something about it. And so now we have a project in Moundsview to reconstruct our streets. We could have lived with those streets, but now we did something about it. Same thing with the noise and the dust. We could learn to live with it, but it's time to do something about it. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Just wondering a couple of things. One is, when we do bring MnDOT forward, maybe we could also understand how sound walls work exactly. The reason I raise that is because of the mention that folks a mile from Highway 10 also are concerned. I'm not sure that a sound wall will actually help those folks. I understand how noise works and how it interacts with sound walls. Is actually sometimes the sound waves kind of bounce up over sound walls and still land pretty far in. And so those folks might not be helped by the sound wall. They might be, but that's what I understand how sound walls work. So it'd be important for folks to understand that if and when a sound wall gets built, folks further in may not receive a lot of mitigation. It's just a fact of life. It's too bad. I don't know how dust would be impacted. I also wonder, Mr. Chair, I had that problem on 394 with the trucks and their braking. I'm wondering if that's an impact, Jake braking, they call it. Local ordinances can be passed if they're authorized by us to put up signs to ask trucks to not do that in particular stretches where there's some pretty heavy impact on residences. That's really loud and really disruptive. That might be a short-term fix for some of the noise.
Might solve some of the problem there. So you aren't on our list of testifiers. If you would identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Carol Langenfeld, and I am community manager of Colonial Village Manufactured Housing Community, which you can see from the overhead is right in the corner of the area that we're speaking. Senator, I'm glad you brought up the point about Jake breaking. That is something I hear from my residents, and I'm here to speak on behalf of those 500 people that can't be here today that are directly impacted by this road surface. Some of these residents are mere feet from this road surface, and we've gone from 28,000 vehicle trips a day up to 80,000 with the potential of increases with the 94 opening out there in Rogers. So I would appreciate all your support. Thank you to the Senator for authoring this bill and anything you can do to help us.
Okay, thank you for being here. Senator Wolf, I think we'll go ahead and lay Senate File 413 over and take up the discussion in the event we have a supplemental budget bill. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
Let me extend the offer to Senator Wolf talk about this Jake breaking issue and how I was able to address it in my community. And it might be a short-term solution.
Trisha, you appreciate the benefit of your experience, Senator Dibble. Thank you for that offer. Senator Reinert with Senate File 1497.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. And I know we're
trying to move things along, and I appreciate everyone who's hung in here with us. And, Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to have some informational hearings on the various transportation bonding requests. Members with me today is Dennis Jensen. He runs the Duluth Transit Authority, and just as means of introduction before he talks about the project, we're talking about a multimodal transit center, which would be a new hub for the Duluth Transit Authority in downtown Duluth. I would just mention a couple things. One, the Transit Authority is a regional transit authority. It's not just a Duluth-specific project. You know, we have the pleasure of being a regional regional center, which brings along things like regional transit needs. And number two, of course, authorities are public agencies, so we sort of meet, I think, some the basic precursors on bonding projects. And, Mr. Chair, with that, with your permission, I would turn it over to Mr. Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dennis Jensen, General Manager of the Duluth Transit Authority. As Senator Reinhart mentioned, we're very excited about this project. What it does, it accumulates a lot of it resolves a lot of issues that we've struggled with at the Duluth Transit Authority in the City of Duluth for several years. I've handed out two items. One is this blue brochure, which really explains the project in great detail, so I'll be very brief in my remarks. There's eight pictures in there, so that's worth 8,000 words, and I'll make my remarks accordingly. The other is the a map of showing the downtown Skywalk connections in Duluth. And the reason those I have included the Skywalk connection is because the transit system made the decision several years ago that we should try to locate the transfer center in downtown Duluth as close as we could to the convergence of all the Skywalks. That was a wise idea at the time, but it succeeded beyond all expectations. And what we have now is a major congestion issue on Superior Street in downtown Duluth. With the 600 buses we take through downtown each day and the 12,000 passengers that we accommodate, what we're trying to do is develop a off-street intermodal transportation terminal, which we've identified. We have already secured $16 million in federal funding for this project. We've identified $4 million in local and private funding for the project. We're working with the private property owners and Wells Fargo Bank, which will have a presence on the facility as also. What the $6 million in state bonding does, allows us to improve the access to the system from the Skywalks. If you've ever been to Duluth, you'll know the major link that Skywalk between the downtown area and the Canal Park and Deck area is called the Northwest Passage. We are seeking to replace that link with this project rather than building the project next to it and then still having the old and outdated Skywalk link. The Northwest Passage accommodates approximately 2,000 people a day. 400 to 500 of those are parkers at the deck facility, and they use the Skywalk to link back into the downtown area. There's three major access points into the Canal Park area from downtown Duluth. One is Fifth Avenue West, the other is Canal Park Drive, and then the Northwest Passage. What this will do is bring the whole project together in one complete construction, and we encourage your support, and I'd be happy to answer any questions in greater detail.
Thank you, Mr. Jensen. And I see that you have already received the $16 million from federal funding.
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
FDA? Okay. Very good. Any questions from the committee? Thank you, Senator Reinhart. And thank you for the overview, Mr. Jensen. We appreciate it and wish you luck.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I would just close. You've found the most important page in the brochure, and unlike a lot of times, the state money is not the first in. It would be the last in. All the other funding sources have been secured, and great work done by the Transit Authority.
As you've seen, you probably have seen some of the discussions we've had lately about state dollars being first in, first out, and we appreciate that the federal dollars are there. So good luck to you, Senator Reinhart. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. We're now going to hear Senate File 1762. Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File 1762 is a very important piece of legislation, and in that it will save our local units of government, including our counties and cities, a tremendous amount of money, much more than is indicated by this $13.1 million when you look at the unintended consequences of not having it. That being said, what this legislation will do will put in place the money that is used by our local units of government to replace wetlands when they do road work, shoulder work, or any other type of work on local road projects that require wetland mitigation. And since 1996 or 1998, this program has been in place and has been funded traditionally through the bonding bill, but for some reason this year the governor didn't include it in his proposed bonding, but we would like to see this added to it. And Bowser does a very good job, as you'll hear from some of our county engineers who are here today, of administering this program, and if we don't have these dollars, it'll go back to 87 individual counties to have to administer this program, and basically it'll take a significant amount of time for each one of them to go through the application process, find the wetlands to mitigate in the wetlands bank, and currently this money is allocated in Bowser. The Board of Water and Soil Resources takes care of that for all of these counties. So with that, I will have our testifiers testify to the bill.
All right. Thank you, Senator Gimsey, for that information. Go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, good afternoon. My name is John McDonald. I am the Faribault County Highway Engineer and the current president of the Minnesota County Engineers Association. I'd like to thank the chair and Senator Gimsey for sponsoring this bill. It's very important to Minnesota counties and locals. On behalf of the Association of Minnesota Counties, the Minnesota Association of Townships, and the Minnesota County Engineers Association, we'd like to express our support for the request for the Local Government Roads Wetland Replacement Program. The legislature did establish this program in 1996, and the state level funding was a result of stakeholder consensus that resulted in wetland regulatory reforms. Under this program, local road authorities are required to report wetlands lost due to local government road construction. The wetlands are then replaced by the state through the Water and Soil Resources Board, or Bowser. We'd like to stress the importance of continued and regular funding of this program, as without it, the requirements to replace these wetlands becomes an unfunded mandate to counties at a time when we are least able to absorb them. Transportation funds, which are already insufficient to meet maintenance and upkeep, will be stretched even further, compromising efficient project delivery and safe roads. A possible result of this would be an increase in property taxes at a time when citizens are struggling to keep their own budgets afloat. We ask you to support this funding request of $13.1 million to acquire and restore wetlands as required by state and federal regulations. All of the stakeholders involved agree on the benefits of the program and the need to permanently fund it. We respectfully request that you give your support to this important program. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. McDonald. Mr. Larson?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Dan Larson, today representing the Minnesota Rural Counties Caucus, 23 rural counties that advocate for rural concerns. We're here in support of the bill. The Wetland Conservation Act requires local road authorities is a state policy that local road authorities must comply with. So the cost of local road wetland mitigation has always been considered a state budget item. I'm old enough to remember, I'm so old, I should say, I can remember, when we passed the Wetland Conservation Act, this was a piece that held that piece of legislation up for a significant portion of time because it was so contentious. And every few years, we have to do some reminding of legislators. I want to see administration, I guess, in this case, but I want to think that this is an oversight by the administration,
because it's fairly commonly accepted that this is a state expense. So we hope that that continues. We hope you look favorably upon this piece of legislation. We thank Senator Gimsey for bringing it forward.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Larson. Any questions, members? Being no further, thank you for your information on this. Seeing no further business to come in front of the committee, the Transportation Finance and Policy Committee will stand in adjournment until February 28th, 2012.
Well, thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
Okay. Of course, I'll talk to Senator Peterson.
Also fun stuff.
Yeah. Get it. Just
all right. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
That I
go. Six hearings.
Yeah, found us.